Good evening. I'd like to call to order the Planning Commission regular meeting for Thursday, January 20th, 2011. The first item of business is to call to order. Second item is to roll call.
Commissioner Moss?
Here.
Commissioner Kayet?
Here.
Commissioner Esselman?
Here.
Commissioner Broily?
Here.
Commissioner Behrens?
Here.
Vice Chair Perkowski?
Here.
Chair Wagner?
Here. The next item on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. Typically, we don't see any changes to that. Item number four is the director's comments. Director Tovar?
No comments
at this point. The next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from the January 6th regular meeting. Commissioner Kaye?
Yeah, I saw that there was an email about this, but apparently, can you explain to us just what exactly happened with the lack of a fuller transcript of the discussion that we had? I saw some email that there had been some problem with recording equipment. Can we just get that on the record?
That's correct. There were problems with the recording equipment, and so that's why the minutes are really summaries this go around. That staff got together the next day to once we found out the recording equipment had malfunctioned, we got together and we recapped the meeting as best we could. So part of the discussion tonight, maybe if we left anything out that you want in, to put that in, but we think we hit the high points.
Okay, I guess I would point out it was a study session, and we do have different expectations on study sessions. However, I did find these sort of unsatisfactory, but lacking the time to reconstruct the whole conversation. I did not try to do that, and I don't have any corrections on that count, but I'd sure like to make sure that this didn't happen again, because those are important documentations of our discussions.
Right, and we're pretty sure that we figured out what the problem was, and at least that problem isn't going to happen again.
Did anyone else have any comments on that? Are we okay with that, or did anyone want to go back and... move those approved. The next item on the agenda is a general public comment, and I assume almost everybody here is here for the legislative public hearing. So this general public comment period right now would be intended for anyone who would like to speak on something other than the Point Wells subarea plan amendment. So if you've signed up at this point and want to speak on the public at the public comment period during the Point Wells discussion, there will be an opportunity. So do we have anyone even?
No.
All right. Next item on the agenda, moving right along, is the public hearing on Point Wells subarea plan. And I have a script that I will read that describes, really it's going to sound like I'm reading because I am. So tonight's public hearing is on proposed amendments to the Point Wells subarea plan. The purpose for the hearing is to obtain public testimony and for the Commission to develop a recommendation to forward to the City Council. I'd like to remind everyone that we're engaged in the public's business and an appropriate level of decorum should be maintained at all times. All comments should be directed through the chair. Only one person will have the floor at a time. Applauding, booing, or disruption of the process will not be tolerated. If you wish to speak on the proposal, please sign up on the yellow sheet located at the table near the door. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person testifying or 5 minutes for someone representing a recognized organization. So if there's someone who's speaking on behalf of a larger group, if they could come up and articulate what that group is, then we'll make sure that we give you 5 minutes on the timer. And then other members that are of that organization are requested to not speak as members on behalf of the organization. So there's only one person from an organization who would be speaking. When I call your name, please come to the microphone, state your name and city of residence for the record. The process will be that the city will present their staff report, the commission will be given an opportunity to ask clarifying questions, and then it'll be an opportunity for members of the public to testify on the proposed amendment. After all the testimony has been received, the commission will begin deliberation and may ask questions of the staff or individuals who have testified. So if you have testified and have raised an issue that we may have questions about, if you stick around, we may be able to then ask you questions because we'll still be in deliberations. Then we'll vote and we'll close the public hearing. I now wish to open the public hearing. I'd also like to allow our clerk to read into the record additional exhibits. I would like to just personally thank people. I don't know if people, how many people have been following how much public input we've had, but we had 121 comment letters as of earlier this afternoon on this matter, and we've had additional ones that we'd like to make sure get read into the record that are on our desk packet. What we'll do is read those into the record. Since we haven't had a chance to read all of those, we're going to take a couple minutes. Recess, I know it's going to feel a little bit long, but we're going to have to read through those, and that'll give us an opportunity to think through it and make sure that we're prepared to answer so.
Okay, exhibit number one is the staff report for the public hearing on Point Wells Subarea Plan Amendment and Modification of Map T18 Street Classifications in the Transportation Element of the Comprehensive Plan. Exhibit number two is... Exhibit number two is existing street classifications map. Exhibit number three, 2009 City of Shoreline traffic flow map. Exhibit number four is table T14, general description of classified streets. Exhibit five is the minutes from the December 3rd, 2009 Planning Commission public hearing on the Point Wells subarea plan. Exhibit six are the minutes from December 10th, 2009 Planning Commission public hearing on Point Wells subarea plan. Exhibit seven is the notice of public hearing. Exhibit eight is the SEPA checklist and threshold determination. Exhibit nine is the January 27th, 2011 pre-application neighborhood meeting notice from BSRE Point Wells LP. Exhibit 10 are all the comment letters.
Did you want me to read all of them?
No, but we had a couple more that were today. Did we need to add those explicitly? So yeah, the ones that came in after the packet, the desk. So there
okay, and that left off at...
just so everyone knows that we got all of them.
Sure. Okay, that left off at 10.21, so I'll read everything beyond that.
Okay, thank you.
Comment from Diane Bowers, 10.23, Elaine Phelps, 10.24, Chu Chen, 10.25, Lonnie Hecker, 10.26, Andy Siglins, 10.27 is anonymous, 10.28, Jan Stewart, 10.29, Janet Vincent, 10.30 is Joan Goofy, 10.31, Sherry Edwards, 10.32, Frank Klein, 10.33, Ollie Backen, 10.34 is Jennifer Getman, 10.35, Susan Merrill, 10.36, Ruth Robinson, 10.37, Richard and Julie Gavert, 10.38, Jack and Kelly McHenry, 10.39 is Brian Rowe, 10.40, Janet Peterson, 10.41, Charles Cross, 10.42, Annie Grosshans, 10.43, Catherine Harvey, 10.44, Catherine Zufall, 10.45 is Robert Hawk, 10.46, Pat Tillman, 10.47, Thomas and Sharon Hansley, 10.48, Jim O'Hanlon, 10.49, Shaquan Fisithical, 10.50, Carissa Sanchez and Brian Brannigan, 10.51 is Vanessa Mark, 10.52, Brent Mooney, 10.53, Rick and Sherry Ashelman, 10.54, Suzanne Armour and Ken Gross, 10.55 is Mary Bannister, 10.56 David Bannister, 10.57 Janice and Jimmy Patterson, 10.58 Kim McKisson, 10.59 is William Willard, 10.60 Bob Haber, 10.61 Joyce and Richard Roth, 10.62 Helga Byhu, 10.63 Patrice McDermott, 10.64 Tim and Leslie Shanahan, 10.65 Kim and Dan McKisson, 10.66 Karen Pipkin, 10.67 Noah Hagland, 10.68 Diane and John Geary, 10.69 is John and Marilyn Boucher, 10.70 is the Holt family, 10.71 Ryan Hurley, 10.72, Frankie Jones, 10.73, Michael Strand, 10.74, Frederick Lafitte, 10.75, David Bannister, 76 is Jack and Kelly McKinley, 77, Kelly Faghan, 78, Mary Bannister, 79, Ashlyn Cross, 80 is David and Cindy Pradmore, 81, Corey Whitaker, 82, Rebecca Dickey, 83, Edward Watson, 84, Karen and Jeffrey Davis, 85 is Robert Manning, 86, Tom Melha, 87, Stephen Poole, 88, Judith Ledhe, 89 is David Becker, 90, Jerry Fleet, 91, Missy Welch, 92, Pam Baronia, 93, Ron Madden, 94, Michael Jackson, 95, George and Jane Meyer, 96, Save Richmond Beach, 97 is the Bedouks family, 98, Laura Lind, 99, Frederick Lafitte, 100, Carol Stoll-Gunner, 101 is Harry and Joyce Landau, 102, Jay Young, 103, Paul Crampton, 104, Bob Ferguson, 105, Brendan Wilhite, 106, Jennifer Hayward, 107, Wendy Smith, 108 is Richard Kink, 109, Krissa Delinganis, 110 is Eric Strandberg and Amy Boone, 111, Richard Gannon, 112, Valerie Craig, 113, Laura Lind, 114, Joseph and Mary Buntrant, 115, Susan Carlson, 116 is Patrick Medaglia, 117, Laura Dempsey, 118, Janice Marker, 119 is Bill and Marcy Oren, 120, Marianne Stephens, 121, Nancy Morris, 122 is from Carl Tuttle and Campbell, 123 is from Clark and Suzanne Westmoreland. That's it.
Thank you, Jessica. Have a cookie. Staff, is there anything that I have neglected at this point to articulate? Or are you ready for your report before we dive? Okay.
We're ready to present.
Great. Director Tovar.
Thank you. I'm Joe Tovar, Director, Department of Planning and Development Services for the city. With me tonight, on behalf of the staff, are Steve Cohn, Senior Planner in my department, City Attorney Ian Sievers, and sitting behind him is Kirk McKinley, who is the Manager of the Transportation Planning Section of the Department of Public Works for the city. They're available here as resources if you have questions you would like to direct that are of a legal or a transportation nature beyond anything we think we can answer. You've entered into your record a lot of input from individuals. I know some of it came in just this evening. After we make our remarks, after you hear from the public, if you want to take some time perhaps to review some of that material, I think it would be appropriate for you to consider doing that. You may even have questions for the staff based on some of the material that's come in. We've scanned it, but I think we would be prepared to answer questions you might have about any of this at that point. This is a public hearing to consider an amendment to the city's comprehensive plan. Two different pieces. One is the Point Wilson area plan that was adopted by the City Council in April of last year. The second piece is an amendment to the transportation element of the comprehensive plan, specifically map T18, dealing with street classifications. The proposal has been on the city's website, been reviewed by a number of people. The changes are both text and map, and they focus on the portion of the city street grid that is on Richmond Beach Drive north of Northwest 199th Street. So the proposal is to amend T18, the map, to classify that road segment as local access street. There also is a proposal to amend the Severia plan by adding a new policy PW12. It's some narrative, and I'll just read it into the record. This is the heart of what the proposal tonight is about. It would add this new language to the city's comprehensive plan to the Siberia for Point Wells. In view of the fact that Richmond Beach Drive between Northwest 199th Street and Northwest 205th Street is a dead-end local access road with no opportunities for alternative access to dozens of homes in Shoreline and Woodway, the city designates this as a local access street with a maximum capacity of 4,000 vehicle trips per day. unless and until either Snohomish County or the owner of the Point Wells Urban Center can provide to the city the transportation corridor study and mitigation plan called for in policy PW9, as well as financial and legal guarantees that the necessary mitigations will be provided, the city should not consider reclassifying this road segment as an arterial with a capacity of 8,250 vehicle trips per day. Intersection or other road improvements that would accommodate and encourage vehicle trips beyond those approved for the local access street, 4,000, or arterial, 8,250 classifications should not be permitted. So that is the proposal. A copy of this has been sent to the Department of Commerce in Olympia. SEPA compliance on this has been done. You have those materials attached. That is the essence of the proposal. Now, the decision criteria for this are laid out on page 9 of the staff report for tonight. Basically, for the benefit of those in the audience, I'll just read this. The Planning Commission may recommend and the City Council may approve or approve with modifications an amendment to the comprehensive plan if the amendment complies with one or more of the following criteria. Number one, the amendment is consistent with the Growth Management Act and not inconsistent with the countywide planning policies and other provisions of the comprehensive plan policies. Or number two, the amendment addresses changing circumstances, changing community values, incorporates a Siberia plan consistent with a comprehensive plan vision, or corrects information contained in the comprehensive plan. Or thirdly, the amendment will benefit the community as a whole, will not adversely affect community facilities, the public health, safety, or general welfare. I think most of the rest of the staff report kind of stands on its own. I'll answer questions about them, but that is what the staff has to say at this point. We'll answer questions you may have or after you hear from the public. If you have other questions that they raise you would like us to address, we'll be ready to do so. Thank you.
Thanks. Do we have any initial questions? I have an initial question then. So procedurally, if all the conditions are met, sort of the fourth line from the bottom on page 8 where it says the city should not consider reclassifying this road segment as an arterial with a capacity of 8,250 vehicle trips per day, you know, kind of all that lead into it, would that be then a completely separate process that would have to be gone through with another comprehensive plan update, or what would the trigger be?
It would take another amendment, this process again.
Okay, so if we went forward with the staff recommendation at this point, it would drop it to 4,000.
For this road segment,
then presumably the applicant, or the not the applicant, but the developer and or Snohomish County would go through the requirements outlined, and then it would come again before the Planning Commission for recommendation and City Council for another vote for an update to the comp plan to adjust it.
That is the intent here. If that does not happen, this policy would say the city should not consider further amendment. Stay with the 4,000 for this road segment.
Okay. So there's at least a double catch because it would need the city to get the guarantees, and then it would all additionally come back for comment and opportunity for adjustment.
The city would have to see the transportation corridor study that's talked about in the earlier policy, PW9, I believe, would have to be produced. We'd review it. If we felt that it was sufficient, along with the legal and financial guarantees that are referenced in this policy statement, then at that point the city could consider amending the plan again. We'd come back to the same process, direction of the City Council, Commerce notice, SEPA notice, back to the Planning Commission for a hearing, public input again, then recommendation onto the council.
My second question then is on the track changes that look like they're in there. Were those ones that were adopted, or is that additional? Because we had a couple things that were in our study session, and now I just don't have I didn't do a cross-reference on the exact wording. So is that adopted and just not cleared, or was that additional to make it consistent throughout?
That was additional to make it consistent.
Okay. So it's not just PW12, but it's the entire, the track changes are intended to go as
there are a few additional changes just to kind of make it everything consistent, yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Commissioner Broyley, Kaye, Vice Chair Pukowski. No questions?
I think I'll save questions for after we've had a chance to hear from the public and study the materials we got today.
Okay. Well, then, as a question to the commission, do we want to look at the materials quickly before we ask staff questions, or do we want to go to public comment and then look at the materials and then ask? I don't think it matters much.
That's why you're the chair.
Okay. Good to make executive decisions. All right, we'll go with public comment. So I have currently 2, 4, 6, 7 people signed up currently. If anyone else would like to come up and comment, they're welcome to do so. As I mentioned, you'll be given 3 minutes to speak unless you're a member of a recognized organization and wish to speak on behalf of that organization. If that's the case, just mention what organization that is and we'll enter it as such. And if other people decide they would like to speak, they can just note it, and then I'll give the sheet back to the clerk, and you can sign in after you've had a chance to speak. Even if it's just somebody wanting to say that they agree. But as you know, we've already received 123, most of which we read into the record tonight. So we have taken the time to read those. So the first person I have signed up right now is Tom Whitson, and then after that, Casey Holt.
Good evening, Chairman. Wanted to thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. I am a resident of nearby town of Woodway, and I live right above Point Wells at 115th Street and Heberline Road. I simply wanted to say and add our voice here for the town of Woodway. I am a town council member of the town of Woodway, to add our support to the effort to consider reclassifying Richmond Beach Drive to local access. As you may know, the road extends into Woodway down there for a short while, and there is access to the homes in Woodway, and it has been always designated as local access. So with that, thank you very much.
Thank you. And after Ms. Holt, we have Jan Bacon or Bakken?
Hi, I'm Casey Holt. I'm here representing the community group Save Richmond Beach.
Let me give you 5 minutes then.
Yeah. Sure. I wanted to thank you so much for all of your hard work. I know you've probably had to slog through quite a few letters, and we really appreciate it. We're here to share our support of PW 13 regarding the amendment to the comprehensive plan to reclassify a segment of Richmond Beach Drive to neighborhood local access. As you may know, we are a nonprofit community organization dedicated to preserving quality of life in Richmond Beach and the surrounding neighborhoods through responsible and sustainable planning. You've already received my written comments. You've also received expert testimony from the transportation engineering firm 10W. 10W reviewed Richmond Beach Drive, because it seems that no one else has, to assess the impacts associated with expansion or upgrade. To distill the report down to one sentence, Richmond Beach Drive residents in Shoreline will likely have their private property taken to even get that road up to neighborhood local standards with the maximum capacity of 4,000 ADT. Now, there's one item that I actually agree with Gary Huff at Carr and Tuttle, which is quite amazing, and that is that we believe that the second half of the amendment is actually inappropriate at this time. Any subsequent amendment to increase capacity should require the appropriate CEPA review and a finding of public use and necessity because of the impacts it would have on Richmond Beach Drive and the residents of the entire neighborhood, and because acquisition of private property will likely be required to bring that street up to engineering standards. If you feel compelled to keep the second half of the amendment, language should be added that will assure the residents of Shoreline that their private property will not be condemned for the benefit of a private Snohomish County development. Thank you again for letting me speak, and thank you for all of your hard work.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Jan Bakken, and I'm here tonight on behalf of my parents who reside on Richmond Beach Drive. We've been concerned about the size of the development proposed to Point Wells and the impact it will have on the community. Ever since this began a few years ago. And frankly, I must admit, I initially laughed this off thinking there's no way Richmond Beach Drive is way too narrow and confined to support this huge development. Well, here we are in 2011. As you know, everyone who lives north of 199th has no other option but to use this road. With traffic from the proposed 3,000-plus condos and retail, I can't even imagine how difficult it would be for those residents to get in and out, especially during rush hour. And from a safety perspective, if there were a need for emergency services due to fire or any type of heightened emergency, Richmond Beach Drive would clearly bottleneck. And even a simple traffic accident would do the same. And it's not as if we're dealing with traffic generalities here. As it stands, 100% of the increased traffic from the development will come and go from this dead end. And let's face it, in a remote, densely populated community that's miles from I-5 or Highway 99, or any real urban destination, people are going to drive. So it's unrealistic to think that a couple of bus stops, carpools, or something like water taxis will have a significant impact. And despite railroad tracks, it's been made clear that there are no plans for a train station. So I am happy to see the city propose an amendment to recognize a Richmond Beach Drive for what it is, a neighborhood access road. I would just ask that you revise the amendment to leave off the provision to change the status back to a collector arterial. Snohomish County and the developers should be held responsible for fitting their development within the community of Richmond Beach and Shoreline, not the other way around. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Jack Malik. I apologize. And then after that, we have Richard, I think it's Kirk.
Hi, I'm Jack Malik. I'm a resident of Richmond Beach Shoreline and also a realtor in the area. And I also thank you very much for all your hard work. I applaud the effort to finally take some initiative on, you know, restricting or limiting the number of trips through that very narrow road. And that I much agree. I think it's a health, safety, welfare, you know, issue. And I think it would truly allow a development at the expense of existing homes and quality of life in Richmond Beach. And that's where I'm invested wholeheartedly, home, family, business, and everything. And I really see it as a detriment. And I feel really good that finally, you know, something, some study has been done and some initiative has been taken to really develop a plan of our own and say this is what could happen here, you know, what can and cannot happen here. And if anything more wants to happen, there has to be some more engineering, some more roadways, and something far more than just one narrow strip in or out. And even if they were to widen that road, the road doesn't just begin and end at that point. It goes all the way up through to Aurora. And I think that truly would be a travesty to see 3,000-plus condominiums and you know, some sort of mixed-use promenade there to try and encourage that type of traffic would really, again, at the expense of the existing quality of life, develop that part of Richmond Beach. Thank you.
Thank you. And after this, we have Dennis Casper.
Hi, my name is Richard Kink. I'm a resident of the city of Shoreline. My only comment would be, well, two of them. One is I would really support and recommend that the city reclassify the entire length of Richmond Beach Drive as a local resident. Between 199th and 195th, there are 19 individual residential lots. There are 32 residential lots on 27th, so there's a total of 51 residential lots that is totally developed. There's extremely limited chance of any infill. So the traffic volume is a traffic volume and will more than be accommodated by a local street classification. Likewise, any claims down the road for taking of private property to increase the size of Richmond Beach Drive for the public benefit, say a park or other amenities, I think the staff and council only have to do is look at Saltwater Park and the traffic count on 20th. 2009, it was 1,400 cars a day average. Taking out for residential properties that are predominantly east of 20th, you could quadruple that number and there'd still be plenty of traffic volume that would fall under the 4,000 vehicle traffic count. So, you know, any request would sure, again, solely be for the benefit of private development. Thanks.
Thank you. And after this, we have Laura Lind signed up.
My name is Dennis Casper, and I'd also like to thank the Planning Commission for all your hard work. And I've seen it in several hearings, and I appreciate it. To rather tag on to what the last gentleman said, I had opportunity to do some research on that stretch of Richmond Beach Drive some years ago, and found out in the archives of King County that road actually, before it became part of the city of Shoreline, was just a neighborhood street. It was not a major collector arterial or anything of the sort. And so I phoned down to the King County Department of Transportation today, and they sent me a second map, which re-verified what I had originally discovered years ago. I don't know how it got converted from neighborhood street under King County to a major arterial under City of Shoreline, but historically it's always been all the way from 196th to 205th. It has been a neighborhood street. And I have the documentation here, and I'd like to give it to the Planning Commission if you're willing to accept it.
Yeah, if you can hand it to the clerk, we'll.
And secondly, I am in support of the amendment, the first part of the amendment that would reclassify this to a neighborhood street rather than what it is now. I'm also opposed to the second part of the amendment, where it starts from unless and until. I don't know. I will defer to the city council's recommendation on this, but it seems to me that it gives the developer a roadmap for how he could attain the ability to use that road for his development there at Point Wells. So especially in light of the recent indications from, what is it, 10W, the transportation consultant, indicating that some of the properties along that road now will have to be condemned in order to make the road qualify. That's totally unacceptable as far as I'm concerned, and you know, we're taking a road here that is a public road, and we're taking private property and using it for public purposes, and I just think that that's really totally wrong. So I do support the first part of the amendment, and I am opposed to the last part of the amendment from the language of unless and until. Thank you very kindly.
Thank you. And after Laura, we don't have anyone signed up. If they'd like to, or you can come down and you just stand in line and speak, and then sign your name after you've had a chance to speak.
Thank you for letting me speak, and I wanted to clarify one thing. I sent two emails because the second one was a corrected one, so you have one less email. I had just said Richmond, I think I said 185th instead of Richmond Beach Drive, so I just wanted to have full integrity there. I am sort of the homegrown voice here, speaking for my family of seven, and my daughter in particular wanted me to say something. She's 15 and a half and will be driving soon, and she cannot imagine if the traffic not only doubles, but even perhaps quadruples, if you think if Point Wells was a reality. Not only do you have the three or 4,000 residents there, and I'm assuming they're going to have more than one car per family, very likely. They're going to have they're going to have visitors. They're going to have, you know, house cleaners. They're going to be the people who work in the Point Wells community and services that they've suggested in their proposal. So anyway, to think of added traffic is just incomprehensible to her, and I think she's actually nailed it. It's I really think it's ludicrous. I know the state board folks said that they have not and did not intend to actually drive down there to see the site, so I'm sort of looking, you're my only hope to be a voice of reason. And I also wanted to say that we live over off of 6 down toward Bowling Creek Park, and this will not only affect the Richmond Beach Drive folks, but every, as someone has indicated, all the way up, you know, through I-5. We, in coming here earlier, I went through two cycles of the traffic light before we could get through right here at Midvale and 99th. So double that,
you know, that would have, who needs that? I also wanted to highlight that there are so many weird intersections on that, on Richmond Beach Road with, you know, weird crosswalks. I mean, I think I counted four of them. There's the one by the old library. There's the one by the little corner store at 20th. There's the one up a bit between the Thai restaurant and Spin Alley, and then there's the big intersection at 185th and 8th. It's a ludicrous place to invite more traffic, more accidents, and I do hope that you uphold the amendment. And also, I did gasp when I heard the second half too. I don't want any loopholes for anybody there. So thank you.
Thank you. We have Anthony Poland.
Good evening. I'd like to thank you for your time and what you do for our city in defending our quality of life here. I know it's a thankless job, quite often long hours and not a whole lot of thanks, so I just wanted to start by saying thank you. I support the first half of this measure as well. Like most of the other testimony I've heard in the room tonight, I'm a little worried about the second half, but I will leave it in your hands to make the proper decision for us. I'm kind of known in Shoreline for thinking outside the box, and every once in a while when it's required, going over the top a little bit. Some of you probably recognize me and know that, but I'd like to say that I fully support what we're trying to do here in terms of limiting the traffic on this roadway. I would hate to see anyone lose their home or any part of their yards to having to make this road wider. And I would like to throw this concept out to you. I don't know if anyone else has done it because I did arrive late. But I've done some checking with the state and the county, and I don't see any reason why we can't put a toll gate in there. Make it a toll road, folks. $3 in, $3 out. Put it right on the county line. That's something I'd really like you to hash around a little bit, think about. Might be something as a stopgap measure should any of the other things we're trying to do here fail. That's all I wanted to say tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We have an opportunity for, if anyone else would like to speak, they can come on down. And then once you're done, go ahead and state your name, city of residence, and then you can sign in afterwards.
I'm Jerry Germis. I'm a resident of Richmond Beach. And I have asked Joe this. I think this might be the actual thing that could stop this development altogether. There is only one access into this. There's only one access. I don't think that's legal. I don't know, Joe, don't you need to have at least two different access in and out of a development? Somebody before me spoke about what would happen if there was even a minor car accident at that one place. Now, there used to be another road there. I'm actually writing a memoir of a guy who was 96 who worked at Point Wells. His job was digging holes to put in the waste. That's what he did there. But I think certainly the gentleman from Woodway doesn't want that to happen. But I don't believe that you can even put the thing together unless you have two accesses. And I'd like to have some kind of some legal individual or somebody with a lot more knowledge than me kind of comment on that if they could. Thank you.
Thank you. We did receive another comment on that, and that is actually a question I have, so I think we will get to it at some point.
Can I have you sign
in? Oh, I'm
sorry. Feel free to. Hi. I did not send an email in. That's why I'm up here speaking, because I do support the first part, and like everybody else, I don't really – the second part makes me nervous. I don't think that we should – I kind of think we should just leave it at local access only, and – but I'll sign the sheet now. Thanks. You.
Anyone else? All right.
All right. I came all the way here, and I do not have a letter in, so I think it is important to have you hear a voice. Mark Weber, and I live in Richmond Beach. Have for about 9 years now. I think I'm going to reflect really a lot of what's been stated, and that is, we came to Richmond Beach specifically for the quality of residential life there. We chose to raise a family there, and we hope our families stay there and raise their children. The impact of the project as planned is massive. It's wonderful for the development. I was enthused early on as I began to see the ideas around sustainability of that land, creating something that could be intriguing and interesting and bring something to a piece of land. In some ways, it's a blight. As it began to unfold and we began to see the reality of it, the impact is devastating. It changes Richmond Beach forever for all of us. I want to simply voice my absolute support for the amendment and trust the full amendment as you make the decision to do it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Laura Lind again with a PS because I forgot 2 points, or at least one. I just want to point out that I think that in terms of other neighborhoods that are going to get impacted, not only would it our neighborhood, because people, they come up 185th, cut down 8th, and then cut over to 6th and then go down, and that's how they access 175th. So we get, you know, when it's ferry time, you can always tell. So there's lots of extra traffic that comes through there. But I think if the Point Wells thing went through, you're going to get a lot of traffic through the neighborhoods right by Cyrie, because they're going to cut, I don't even know the names of the roads, but do you know the shortcuts that I'm talking about? So I think, and I actually just spoke to someone last week in that neighborhood. She had no idea of what was going on or that it would impact her. So I suspect that there's just a lot of people out there that would just be horrified if they realized the impact on their neighborhoods from this. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good evening. My name is Jerry Patterson. We're one of the probably most recent residents of Richmond Beach, effective about January 1, and the northwest most home in King County. I have a question perhaps for the staff and for the commission. Did I get that? Was I wrong on that?
No, I'm just thinking all the way up.
Yeah.
I hope I did that right. Visualizing.
Oh, okay. All right.
The house.
Question for you. Is there any language in the code for any other street or corridor that has the language unless and until? You can discuss
we're gonna
that.
Have to, yeah, stuff. I think we'll have
yeah,
to ask.
Yeah, discuss that. And secondly, I presume you'll discuss the rationale for the second half this evening. Okay? Thank you very much.
And if you could sign in, please.
Hi, I'm Lindy Schwartz. I'm a over 20-year resident of Richmond Beach. And I also want to add that I also work for a public transit agency, and a lot of the decisions that we make at our agency are not necessarily about 5 years from now, but 10 years from now, but 50 years from now, and 100 years from now. And what is the legacy that we want to leave behind for our children and our grandchildren, and a quality of life that brought us here to leave to them? And I think it's really important to keep that in mind as we go forward with this amendment. And I approve and support it as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Right. Just for those of you, if there is anyone else that would like to speak, now is really the opportunity. Once we get into deliberations, there won't be another opportunity for public comment. So if please come on down. And let me just clarify, we may ask people to come back up if we had a specific question for someone from something they had originally asked, but we wouldn't ask anyone to just come and speak. So thank you for coming up. And
yeah, thank you. My name is George Mayer. I live in Richmond Beach. And in the discussion that's gone on so far, we seem to somehow have placed the onus of this transportation and access to Point Wells on the city of Shoreline, whereas the development should be focused on Snohomish County and access from there. So in your deliberations, may I urge you to consider that the onus should be on the Snohomish County and their problem of providing access to this facility. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. All right. If we don't have anyone else, then questions from the commission to staff. Maybe we can start with an easy one. We had a question. Commissioner Burns?
Very easy question. It's for our transportation director. And looking at the table T14.
Oh, excuse me. Can you speak into your microphone? I can't even hear you over here.
I'm sorry. The question refers to the table T14. It's on page 19. One of the things that I noticed here in going through the table was the fact that buses are prohibited on, not prohibited exactly, what is the word that they use? Buses, transit stops, not generally allowed except for short segments. Can you, just for my own comfort, discuss how you feel this the transit situation here would affect the new park we have down there?
Kirk McKenna, transportation manager. I thought it was an easy question.
I try.
Is this chair's discretion to get someone else to ask us?
I just want to make sure that we don't wind up eliminating the ability for anybody to take a bus to a park.
Well, currently the transit system, as I understand, and Metro operates the transit system, doesn't go to the park. It stops short of the park. And there's a layover, or has been in the past, a layover at the bottom of the 196th in that general vicinity. So right now there isn't any transit access beyond that.
They have no effect whatsoever.
Currently, yes.
Commissioner Kaye?
Purposes of terminology here, the table that Commissioner Burns just referred to has two categories of local street with slightly different provisions, and unfortunately the staff report packet, for example, refers to neighborhood street, whereas the table refers to either a neighborhood collector or a local street. Mm-hmm. Which is it we're talking about? Because I've seen both terms and hybrids of terms thrown around, and they seem to have different considerations for things like transit, maximum speeds, lanes, things like that. So for our information, which is it?
My understanding from reading the amendment is that it's a local. There are two categories of local streets. Mm-hmm. There's a neighborhood collector and a local street. And my understanding is that it's being recommended as a local street, which is the lowest of the two.
Was that it? That's correct, Joe? Director Tovar, was that the intention? Okay.
We're on the same page.
Okay. Just for clarification, I don't know if we have packets out that people can refer to. There are a couple that, so like it's probably hard to follow along, and I don't know if we can maybe get some things up on the screen so that in case we need to have people be able to see what we're looking at.
Sure.
That would be helpful. I know we just lost Jessica.
Sorry, for those who do have it, it's on page 19. Page 19, I believe.
We were wondering if there's any that could be handed out, correct?
Well, we have a couple that are handed out, but not.
Okay.
But Jessica's back. Commissioner Kaye, go ahead.
So a follow-up question then, and reading the descriptions of both versions, local street and neighborhood collector, both clearly seem to be geared towards residential uses. And one thing I'm kind of struggling to understand is that while it is largely or substantially inactive, right now we don't have a residential use at Point Wells, right? And I'm trying to understand what this reclassification would mean for the current type of use that's there, or let's say in the future, if for some reason the residential, you know, several thousand unit model doesn't happen, and instead the site is reoccupied as an industrial site, would that be then in conflict with our having a local street? I'm just trying to understand sort of the repercussions for not just the proposed development, but for what's there now and what presumably could persist indefinitely there, assuming it's still consistent with Snohomish County's urban center designation.
The I'll take a stab at that, and then Joe might jump in and fill in the holes that I might leave. Our street classification system is really built from the high end, the principal arterial, all the way down to the local street. And the way that it's built really is about access, the number of people being served with driveways, and the traffic volumes. It's not so much built around the land use specifically. It's more about what can the road handle as far as safety and vehicle volumes and how many access points there are on it. So typically a local, the lower down in the category, lower down, it's like very much like your blood system, the lower down in the category, the more access is provided. So every house has every property has a driveway. People, the volumes are low enough, so typically people could many times back out onto the road. But as you get farther up, access gets more and more limited. If you compare I-5 as one end, the only access you have on I-5 is at the interchanges. Aurora is the next layer down. It has limited access. You can't turn left into properties unless you happen to be where there's a left turn pocket, so on and so forth. So the lower the classification, the higher the access, and typically the lower the volumes. So I guess I wouldn't say it's dependent on what type of land use is there, whether it's industrial or single family residential. It's more about access and safety.
So I guess just to ask that question in a slightly different way. If that site were to in the future instead become or again become an active industrial site, would that also require major changes to the roadway and to its classification? I'm just trying to understand the permutations here.
I think it's all pretty much speculative. I mean, I think depending on the type of traffic, the amount of traffic, the type of vehicles, it was, hundreds of trucks per hour, something like that, that would be having a major impact on safety and on the integrity of the road itself. We would look at maybe potentially a change to the classification and potentially just rebuilding the street to make it just so it was safer and could support the use. It's all, there's no fine line of where you'd decide when something would become something else.
Thank you.
Let me just add, maybe your question addresses something like the Brightwater, which was an interim, highly intensive industrial use of the site. And the city filed an appeal under SEPA of the King County project based on failure to mitigate the traffic on this corridor and achieved a very extensive list of mitigation improvements to the corridor if they were to truck spoils out using the corridor, and I understand they didn't do that. So similarly, it's not a strict trip count, but if, as Kirk said, a certain type of traffic, heavy truck usage, for instance, associated with an industrial use in the future, we would address that permitting process or those regulations through the SEPA process.
Thank you.
Thanks. I'll ask what would not probably appear to be an easy question, but one that was raised in the transportation engineering report that was submitted as an addendum to Ms. Holt's Save Richmond Beach letter, which for those that are following along is item 10.96 on the third page of that letter, which was also raised by somebody who asked tonight about the requirement to have a secondary access point for fire and other emergency services when there's a certain threshold that's tripped. It referenced standards within King County for reaching a trigger at 100 residential units or an equivalent of 1,000 ADT. I don't know if you, but if you have an answer right away, if we can make sure that we tick that one off when you can pull up the appropriate citations that would be responsive to what.
We could appreciate coming back to some of these. You might give us some time to think through, give you a better answer.
Okay. So that would be one that I had.
What was the site?
I presume that everybody hasn't had an opportunity to review in detail necessarily, not from the commission, but from the public that hasn't had an opportunity to review all the minutes from our last meeting. Some of the questions raised tonight, the example being, you know, alternate roads, et cetera, we did have some discussion on it. So if people were interested in looking back at some of the discussion, I mean, and the comment was made that there was a road from Woodway that went down, and the discussion at the time was that that was a critical area that was not allowed to be built on without significant mitigation. So maybe we can address that as well, sort of what the requirement would be there, and is that a possibility, and sort of just summarize briefly the conversations we've had about both that and an access point up through the north through Snohomish County.
This issue was discussed by the Planning Commission in December of 2009 when you first saw the Siberia Plan, Point Well Siberia Plan that the city adopted. We looked at these questions. People had asked the question about the road coming down from Woodway down across the meadow from 238th southeast down to, southwest, down to Point Wells. If you look at aerial photographs, you'll still see the vestiges of that old road. But that old road was vacated by Snohomish County in 1962. Hasn't been open for a number of years. There were slope failures on the steep slope that washed out that road a number of times. So that's why the road was abandoned. If someone were to want to try to resurrect that road, re-engineer it, the challenges would be, number one, it is a critical area. Even in Snohomish County, they have critical area regulations that prohibit that sort of improvement to a critical area. If it were to get up to the town of Woodway, there's no reason to believe the town of Woodway would open the gate at 238th to admit traffic. Another issue would be cost. Now, again, I got to that one farther down the list, because if you have enough money, you can buy enough concrete, enough steel, you can build a road going almost anywhere. So I think the constraints are really more political and legal rather than engineering.
And then maybe just to also reiterate that the city of Shoreline does not have the option to put a gate that does not open. That was something that we don't, I mean, just because you made the comment that the city of Woodway might not open that gate even if they built a road, that is not an option for the city of Shoreline.
As a practical matter, there is no right-of-way going up into Woodway. The right-of-way that existed was vacated back in 1962. The only right-of-way serving these properties, including the Point Wells Urban Center, is Richmond Beach Drive down into Shoreline. I think we've said it several times in other records in the past that we don't see that the city has legal authority to close the road. We've never answered the question, what else might the city do? Toll booth, toll roads. It's been raised before. We've never really seriously considered that. I think the city attorney might want to add a little bit to that, but I think one thing that the city does have an interest in is managing safety and improvements in our rights of way. So it is at our council's discretion and direction to our staff as to how we maintain, what sort of permits we issue for cuts in our rights of way. Ian, do you want to add more to that?
I think that's essentially our approach, starting with this comp plan amendment, is that the corridor is within the city of Shoreline. It goes through one of our neighborhoods, and we have the planning authority to control what the character of that neighborhood will be, whether there's a high capacity highway, freeway running through it or not. We have the legislative authority to exercise condemnation power to make that road happen or not. And this directive would be applicable to permitting for improvements to the roadway, expansion of the roadway, expansion or improvements to intersections, and say to the city staff that those permits will not be issued until the road is reclassified if it would exceed the 4,000 local road standards.
That raises an excellent follow-on question that was also comes out of the attachment that was submitted by Ms. Holt regarding, and there were a number of residents who had reiterated the assertion by the transportation engineer that there would be required taking of land and
private property along that road. As per the discussion we had last week, I don't think that, or the last time we had the study session, there was some indication that that was not required. So maybe you can clarify if you've had a chance to look at what sort of is in existence and what would be the future potential at 4,000 versus whatever might come.
Let me take a start at that, and Joe and Ian may jump in as well. The right of way, which is what the city has control over, of that roadway is 60 feet in general. It's wider in places and it varies a little bit on the curves. But 60 feet is the standard right of way available out there. Unfortunately, and what happens in many cases within the city, property owners don't know where that line is. We don't know where the line is typically until we go out and survey it. So people start to build improvements in the right-of-way and sometimes think that they own that. In many cases, the right-of-way is the city's property, and we own and have ultimate rights to it. With that said, and seeing how looking at the aerials and from the information we know without surveying, and again, you need to survey it to know exactly where the edge of the property line is and where the right-of-way starts. Not just in looking at the maps and where we think it is, we think there's an adequate room out there to put in two, maybe three lanes and probably a sidewalk. Again, that would be a major impact to the frontage of the properties in there and could creep over to the east where the steep slopes are and in some cases about where the railroad area is. And not only that's why we've recommended that in our discussions with the potential developer that they almost would need to do a lot-by-lot engineering study to a 15, 20, 30% level so they could tell and talk to each property owner about how you'd mitigate a widened road to the east or west and how it would impact their properties. Would we have to, as Joe said, you can, with enough money, you can build anything. But the idea would be, if this proceeded forward, would be to try to stay in the right-of-way as much as possible, and I think could very well do that. If we needed to get onto someone's property to build a retaining wall, to make the driveway work because the grades could change as you creep into someone's steep driveway, obviously there's a big impact on the slope of that driveway. So there are permits, and Ian's an expert at getting those permits and tools needed in order to work with property owners to actually get onto their property to make the improvements. But I'm pretty confident that ultimately the ultimate project could probably be built within the city's existing right-of-way. But again, it's very critical that if it did move forward that there be, you know, property by property work to try to figure out how to get that road cross section to fit.
And let's ask the hypothetical. Let's say at some point there was something where the best scenario was that, you know, instead of because of the way the curve in the road, that something were to impact a particular property owner on their actual property. What would the city's process be versus the developer? Maybe you can explain, you know, since you're familiar with this, how would that process-wise transpire?
Well, again, if if additional right-of-way were needed, I think is your question.
Yeah, that's.
And Kirk's comment was a lot of private development is going to be impacted just using the right-of-way we have because a lot of it is built in one side of the right-of-way, usually the uphill side. But if we do need a wider profile for additional lanes or for traffic safety or to handle the volume, we go through a condemnation process. I think Ms. Holt suggested that we maybe add some language about SEPA and public use and necessity. Mm-hmm. I don't; those aren't necessary because those are restating what are required anyway. If we were to do a major road project, SEPA would be required. If we had required that additional right-of-way, that's a mandatory legislative finding that the Shoreline City Council has to make. And then they pass that to the court if we're not able to settle to acquire property that the city's decided it needs. And the court makes a secondary ratification or review of that finding of public use of necessity in court, which can be contested by the property owner. So
a lot of deference is given to the city council when they make that legislative determination that we need the additional right-of-way, but they can't be forced to condemn property.
So, and I'm not at this point asking for a estimate, and Kirk, you had indicated that you thought that most of it could be handled. Is it your current assessment that that's like, you don't think that there's any impact that's and I'm not trying to get you, trap you here in any way, but just sort of ballpark, do we think maybe there's one property, or are we talking that we don't have any reason to anticipate that, and if it did happen, that might end up happening, but that it's unlikely, or well, not likely, but just what's your gut?
Well, you know, a lot of
on record.
Question I got, well, it's rumbling right now. It's interesting because what we've said all along is that the city needs a corridor study. The city needs to have some good numbers about who's leaving that property and who's accessing the property and so on and so forth. Several of the audience commented about access for emergency vehicles, if it's a two-lane road, if one of the lanes is blocked, how do emergency vehicles get in, how do vehicles safely operate if there's a breakdown or if there's a closure of one lane, because that's an issue for us as well. So, you know, I think if there's a development going in there, we would probably try to get a three-lane cross-section so that there is room to pass a blocked lane if there is a blockage, a breakdown, an accident, or some other sort of emergency, or some other alternative. An alternative might be a mountable two lanes with a mountable sidewalk the whole way that a emergency vehicle or someone could potentially. There's a lot of different approaches to dealing with that safety and that blockage issue. My gut is that no matter what we do, that the frontage of those properties, particularly on the east side of the road, many of them would be impacted by the project. And again, I'm not saying that their impacts would be on their property. I think the impacts would primarily be within our right-of-way. But to them, they've lived there and they've put gardens and walls and stairs and fences and whatever in there. And that's an investment they've made at the risk in the right-of-way, but it's still something that would be an impact to them.
I've been monopolizing Commissioner Behrens.
Back to practical. Nice practical question. I like to try to ask practical questions. At what trip count would it become necessary to create this three-lane road? Is that a particular trip count, or would that be based on the type of structures that were there?
I wish the traffic engineer was here because he would say, you know, it's a road with a potential blockage, and I could talk to an accident or emergency where it could be blocked. That he'd always want to have two lanes open. That's how he would answer that. And I guess I would say that, but I would say it with a caveat, and that caveat being there are several ways to skin a cat, and we shouldn't be locked into a particular design. Three lane with sidewalks on both sides would be our standard cross-section accessing something with this large of volume coming out or this large of a development. But I think, you know, as you work through the design process, that there are other ways, other opportunities to potentially provide that security as well and safety.
What I'm trying to get at is the size of at what point does the size of the development make the road untenable? Inadequate.
Correct. Currently designed.
As currently there. Got a guess as to how much more you could put in there before the road literally would not hold the traffic going down?
Well, I would tell you right now that from a pedestrian standpoint, that road doesn't work. There's no safe pedestrian facility along there.
There's no sidewalk.
Yeah, there's no sidewalk. I would also say that if there was a breakdown or emergency that blocked that road, that also doesn't work. So, I mean, I'm not going to give you a number because it just depends. there are a lot of factors involved.
It would be, I'm trying to think of this, you know, in a kind of a practical way. It would certainly, the type of buildings, the number of people, the number of trips, these would all make that road much more rapidly non-functional.
Well, if I could answer that.
Yeah.
I think that I understand your point, but functionality also will be a function for what improvements are made.
Yeah.
As Kirk has pointed out, there are no pedestrian facilities for much of this segment, so that is not functional right now from that perspective. The other thing I want to, again, have a step back and keep in mind is before this amendment was proposed, the city's comprehensive plan says a multi-use development at Point Wells is appropriate. The city supports it. Says that traffic implications of that development are important to the city, has drawn this threshold of 8,250 vehicle trips per day as a threshold, and calls for a detailed transportation study, even to the level of what Kirk was describing, every lot frontage to know what would happen within our right-of-way to things including rockeries and landscaping and mailboxes that people think they own. No disrespect to them, but I just want to be clear when we're saying that the right-of-way is land within the city's discretion to use for its purposes, circulation, utilities, safety, amenity. Those are things that we have been contemplating all along with the Sebaria plan that was adopted by council last April. It's really more a matter of how do we get to the determination of what will that improvement need to look like? How much of it will be two-lane? How much of it can be using some of these innovative alternatives that Kirk is saying could be explored, examined, engineered, costed out? But we don't have that yet, and we wouldn't get that without this amendment until some point in the unknowable future. But with this amendment, our intent is to say we would need to see that information, that level of understanding, analysis, guarantee of what would be needed to be improved, and appropriate participation by the property owner creating the project impacts to share those costs before we would consider going back to 8250. So again, status quo right now is the city's plan contemplates multi-use of the Point Wells property, not at the scale that is allowed by the county's urban center, which is another issue outside of this process. But we do not oppose, the city does not, as a matter of policy, oppose development of that property. They do not oppose mixed use of that property. They do not oppose traffic coming from or going to that property. But we do oppose something beyond E250 as it exists right now, as our policy exists right now. So this would go beyond that and say, lower this segment to 4,000 until and unless, and I think to answer another question that was asked earlier, do we use that phraseology anywhere else? The answer is no. This is a very, very anomalous situation, not just in Shoreline, but in the state. I'm not sure there are other situations like this really anywhere else in the country where you have a land use permitting and policy making decision right across the line from a road segment with these characteristics. So we've tried to deal with those circumstances, deal with that division of authority and jurisdiction and permitting and plan making as best we can, and this is a refinement on the way the council has tried to do that.
Commissioner Burley and then Commissioner Kai.
I was curious with regard to the commissioner or the person from Woodway, is he still here?
Council member?
He had to leave.
Council member?
Mr. Whitson?
My question was his comment a personal comment, or did it reflect the feelings of the entire council? Does anybody know?
I don't know that he said that tonight. I did speak this afternoon with the mayor of Woodway, who indicated he would be coming and speaking, I believe, on behalf of the town. But that was my understanding. It may not be a correct one.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Kaye?
I have two questions. One is this one. This one really is easy, I promise. In our packet, we have a map that shows, and I found this actually extremely helpful. It's a traffic flow map from 2009 that shows average weekday traffic volume.
Jessica, can we get that on the...
Is that? Can we project it?
Sorry.
Oh.
I'm certainly speaking on behalf of Woodway.
Can you want to come up to the...
Just so it's on.
Did you want to ask him a question?
Well, I just wanted to answer that question.
Again, Tom Whitson with the town of Woodway. I'm a council member, and I meant to be speaking on behalf of Woodway in addition to my personal belief. So,
thank you.
So this map, I thought, was really helpful because I think we all were very familiar with traffic patterns in our sort of own neighborhoods, and we know many of the streets in our neighborhoods and kind of what the sort of pace of traffic is throughout the day. But I think it would be, if you had asked me how many cars pass my house, I would not have guessed the number that I see on the map. So I just want to clarify that I'm understanding this correctly, that based on this study, if I'm looking at sort of Richmond Beach, I get the drives and roads mixed up. I apologize because I don't live right down there. But as you start kind of heading up the hill out of Richmond Beach, at the intersection of approximately, I think that's 20th, it shows that the average daily trip volume, this is 2009, is 3,849 trips.
Yes.
So I'm interpreting this correctly. So this, and I'm just very briefly, were these sort of, how long was the assessment period? I'm sure you had a statistically sort of relevant way of measuring, and I know you put the little black things out to measure the car counts, but I'm just wondering, was this, what time of year is this? How do you decide that this is the appropriate average weekday?
We do what they call hose counts, as we call them. We do those a couple times a year. We keep them out for the entire week, and typically the days, and again, I wish the traffic engineer was here, but it's an average weekday traffic. So it's an average of I think it's all 5 days, but sometimes some agencies use just 4 days. I wish I knew the answer, but I can't tell you that. But it is statistically valid. We do it every year. We have been seeing, in general, traffic decreasing the past 3 or 4 years, 1 or 2% per year. So we do monitor it, and we count them fairly regularly, yes.
Okay. My second question is maybe not quite as straightforward. Should we, and this might be for Dr. Tovar, I'm not really sure who'll be best to answer this, but if we were to pass this amendment, as you noted, the City of Shoreline has already supported the concept of mixed-use development on that site and so forth. Could a developer in principle then pose something, some scaled-down project, and demonstrate through a study that it would add no more than, you know, only bring the traffic count on this stretch to 3,999 per day, which would be sort of similar to the volume up several blocks up there near 20th. What would happen then? I understand there would still probably need to be improvements, because as part of development, you often have to provide some improvements associated with the direct impacts of something you're proposing. But just talking through that scenario. So we have now a local street, 4,000 max. Somebody proposes a development that would create or bring the traffic count to 4,000.
Okay. That would be presumably reviewed as a permit application in Snohomish County. An environmental review would be done on it, most likely an environmental impact statement. We would review that, comment on it. Appropriate mitigations could be required as conditions of SEPA on that Snohomish County permit. We also have, as a city attorney mentioned earlier, we have independent authorities to how we use our right-of-way and what improvements we do and don't allow to be made in our right-of-way. We'd be very interested in knowing what specific improvements would be necessary to make it as safe and functional as possible. But again, we'd be looking to the application that is creating the demand and the impact to fund that more detailed analysis and engineering design. But as a matter of policy, I guess that's really the heart of your question. Yes. Are we saying we could live with 4,000 trips? That's what this amendment would be saying.
Thank you.
As a follow-up on that, then, the city doesn't have the authority to compel at the permitting process because it would be a Snohomish County permit, except for requesting that they contemplate SEPA conditions. And I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but
the attorney can give you a more balanced, legally sufficient answer to that than I can.
Well, that's actually the tricky part, but we don't issue that permit. We do comment on SEPA. SEPA doesn't have a recognized jurisdictional boundary, so we would certainly comment on that. We would scrutinize their assertion that it was going to stay within our our trip level that we've adopted. But if we were convinced it did, and it required some improvements, but still within
this mandate, we would then allow that those improvements to take place.
Thank you.
Mr. Moss, and then Vice Chair Pekoski.
So I just want to restate to see if I really understood what I think I just heard. If some developer, whether it's the current potential developer or somebody 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the road, were to put in a permit application with Snohomish County, since they are the permitting authority, since the land is in their county, there would be the variety of different types of reviews that occur with all development where there's a significant impact, whether that's SEPA, EIS, etc. And at the end of the review, if there were no other mitigating factors that would change the situation, and the traffic volumes show to be less than 4,000, which, assuming we passed the first part of this amendment and made it a local street with not to exceed 4,000 for simplicity's sake, then the permit could get issued by Snohomish County. But what I missed in there is that would we then, as the City of Shoreline, be responsible for absorbing those costs?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
All right.
It would always be an impact or mitigation directly related to the development, even though it was a smaller project, even though it didn't exceed our 4,000-foot level. But if there were, for instance, the road profile is fine, but they needed some sidewalks to be installed, didn't need additional land or roadway width, but it would still be directly related to that new development's impacts, and they would be responsible for the costs of that mitigation.
Okay. All right, so that answers.
They would process that permit. They would pay for the installation, just as a development within the city would pay for those frontage improvements.
Okay, so that clarifies one of my questions. My second question is, let's say we're well down the path. We're all retired. So say 40, 50 years from now. and just over the progression of time, something occurs that there's enough development at Point Wells, and not necessarily the formal development, but that some type of land use goes in that's under the current permits. It may not necessarily bring in additional housing, the types of things where we're looking, but again, it stays under the 4,000, and it just kind of trickles up there over the course of time, no big planned development. How does that come to play? I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is where there's no enormous, all of a sudden we're going to do this, but it's just slowly built up piece by piece by piece, and all of a sudden you trip that threshold. Or, you know, I think we've talked about this in context to other development as well.
Okay. It's a hypothetical. I think it's a pretty remote hypothetical, partly because of the facts of the site. If we're talking about the Point Wells Urban Center, there's a lot of remediation that would have to be done there before it could be reused in some other way. A lot of expense, a lot of work. I don't know that that would necessarily facilitate or enable the kind of incremental improvements that you're talking about. But for argument's sake, let's say that somehow it could be done. Until they got up to the point where the threshold on that road segment was today's level, 513 plus 4,000 more, I think we would be continuing to say it's consistent with our policy.
Yeah, I don't think the situation you pose is any different than the standard concurrency model for intersections that we're mandated to follow. So incrementally, you approach maybe a level of service at an intersection, and it's not one big giant Point Wells development, but maybe a small apartment block here and another one here, but slowly that level of service limit is reached, and that last apartment may put it over the edge and not be able to be permitted. So I think that's probably what you're talking about, and it would operate the same way.
Okay. All right, Vice Chair Pekoski, and then
after that, maybe we can take 5 minutes to read our... I've been reminded that we have some dust packets that we still need to look at.
I'll classify this as a pretty easy question. So,
when we're looking at
standard
the
definition,
when we're looking at the proposed language for PW12, one question I have is where we say local access street. I'm just wondering why we have the word access there. If since it's local street is the actual classification.
Could be local street.
And then when we, or when the proposal says at the end, intersect this last sentence, and then it says local access street, so I'm assuming remove access there, but then the parentheses 4,000, the 4,000 is in, sorry, it's in reference to the maximum allowed in the table, right?
Yes.
T14, but then the 8,250, from the arterial classification, that's not coming from the table per se. It's coming. So I'm just curious if what would happen if we took out those parentheses, you know, and just would then it just refer to the, would it then by definition refer to the table? So that, and then would that, then arterial classification could be higher than 8,250, correct?
Yeah, the 8,250 came from the traffic, the analysis we did of their SEPA report.
Right, and so that's why I'm just thinking about the wording here. If it's it's just, it's a little bit of a mix. We're using 4,000 right, because it's coming from the table, but we're using 8,250 and referencing arterial classification, and that's, but that's coming from what you just said from the study. And maybe that's not a problem, but it just seems a little...
It does seem a bit clumsy.
Yeah, so...
The terminology is not self-consistent,
right? Yes. And then maybe that, and then if you didn't, and so I'm just wondering what the fix is. I mean, and maybe you need to think about it for a little bit, or if so, and then in reference to many of our comments tonight, and I think Director Tovar has started to address this, or maybe has addressed this, or but can you talk about the rationale for the second half of the? Of the policy statement beginning at unless and until?
Well, this is a recognition of the fact that the status quo right now is the city is saying as a matter of policy the threshold is 8,250, because this amendment only deals with the segment between Northwest 199th and the county line. This language is needed to keep it consistent with the fact that that is the overall policy statement of the city, as overall threshold of impacts that we would accept from the Point Wells Urban Center. If you decide to take out, or to recommend that we take out, the second half of PW12, we also would need to go and do some other work elsewhere in these preceding policies to remove any reference to 8250. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a choice I think you have. I think I'd want to maybe talk to the city attorney briefly before we give you a final answer on this. But one question would be, what is the scope of tonight's hearing? The scope of tonight's hearing is focused on this segment of road from Northwest 199th to the county line. It's not been, the city would be changing policy for the rest of the road network from that point south and east. So I don't know if we would need new notice, new hearing, new process to go beyond the road segment that we've given an explicit comment about tonight.
But focus on the road segment.
Yeah.
As far as a fix on your sort of incongruous references in the parentheses, I know we're a real proponent of footnoting, so you could actually go to the comp plan table and do a footnote under the arterial where it maybe goes to 9,000 and just list roads where we specifically designated a lesser a limit. That would be one way to do it. I think the proposed change is clear enough, except for that we know we're getting a trip source from the table in one case and then mm-hmm. simply the sentence above it. But sentence above it is clear that that number is for this particular arterial. This particular arterial with that limit. So,
all right, Commissioner Kai and Burley, although you did want to look at the, is that what you were going to ask? No.
Yes.
Okay. Would you like to ask?
I would like to. There's a couple of things that we received when we got here tonight. We did not have a chance to read. They're not long, but they're, I think, important. And pose some questions that I think we'll want to follow up tonight with the city attorney and Director Tovar. So I would like to ask for 5 minutes to read this, the two documents that we did not see till we got here.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Burley, are you?
Well, I had, I wanted a little more clarification on a question that Commissioner Kaye raised. Either I'm dense or old or both. I wasn't clear on the answer. His question being, and let me rephrase it, if Point Wells were to begin functioning again as it did at its peak, whatever that was, how would that impact this relisting to a local street? I'm not saying that it's something else, but if Point Wells were to open back up and operate at the capacity that it did at its peak, would they be able to do so under this local street classification?
So one approach to that would be whether their existing use has lapsed or been abandoned. If not, they wouldn't need a new permit to re-energize the use of the tank farm as a non-conforming use. And then they'd have non-conforming rights to operate and continue to put the traffic trips on that road corridor, because there's no permitting involved. If they had the right under the Washington's non-conforming use doctrine to restart, they could reestablish the trips from the old days when they were in full capacity.
Okay, thank you.
Let's go ahead and take 5 minutes then to look at these documents and.
Where is the most? And that was. Are they at the beginning or at the
these
end?
These two.
122.
They were separate.
I read that one.
What I said. And this one.
Well, I thought
this
was.
I need to read
Jessica,
this.
Did you get?
Never
mind. I'll.
Because I have some.
We know where you're going. Do you want to talk about any of these points? I was going to look up the statute on how frequently you come in.